Talking with Dr. Harrison, known more as Jack Schmidt, who is the lunar module pilot of Apollo 17. Jack, tell us a little about your background. Tell us what brought you to be an astronaut.
Well, I guess the chain of circumstances of me becoming an astronaut are just like circumstances in anybody's life. They're tortuous in some respects. I was born in New Mexico in a small mining town. As a matter of fact, my birthplace right now is in thin air, so to speak, in a copper mine. The town has subsequently been moved and the copper mined out from underneath it. Huh. Santa Rita, New Mexico was the town. I grew up in Silver City, New Mexico, again a small mining and ranching town in New Mexico. And spent 17 years of my life there, partly associated with my father, who was also a geologist, what we call an exploration geologist, looking for mineral deposits. Subsequent to that, I went to Caltech, University of Oslo, and Harvard universities on the way to getting a doctorate. And I guess it was while I was in Norway that my first real interest in the space program started to develop from a very general point of view, because that was the time when the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, and it became very clear that the space program was going to be a dominant thought in people's minds, both within our country and certainly within the world from that time forward. After that, after Norway, I was still working on my doctorate degree at Harvard, and that occupied most of my time until it became necessary to look for a way to make a living, to use this fantastic education that I was able to get. And the only thing that really seemed, this was 1964, that seemed to be intriguing to my mind after many years in the academic world was the work that Dr. Eugene Shoemaker had started with the U.S. Geological Survey in Flagstaff, Arizona, and that where they were starting to do photogeologic mapping of the moon. That is, they were trying to, using photographs taken from the Earth, to determine the nature of materials and their distribution on the lunar surface in hopes of understanding more about another planet and in relating that understanding to the Earth. And this seemed to be a very exciting thing to me at that time. And so I went to work for Shoemaker and the U.S. Geological Survey, and very shortly thereafter, NASA asked for volunteers for the scientist-astronaut program. And although looking back on it, it was not nearly as logical as it seems now, but it turned out it would be a very logical thing for me to do based on the experience I'd had, limited experience there with the U.S. Geological Survey, and plus the continuing growing concern that space exploration was going to be extremely important for mankind, and in particular for my own country and the traditions it has developed over the centuries, really, that are based, and not in small part, on its history of exploration.
So you were accepted by for the astronaut corps, and that meant going back to school, didn't it?
It did, and I really have never ceased going to school. This whole 7 years now has been one continuous learning process for me, in areas that I never dreamed that I would be studying.
Well, you represent several firsts in the Apollo program. You're the first scientist to go to the moon, and the first bachelor to go to the moon, too, aren't you?
Yes, Jack Schweigert is and was a bachelor when he went around the moon with Apollo 13, but I guess I'll be the first bachelor to land on the moon. That's
right. And you're also the youngest in this particular crew, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess I am the youngest on the crew. I'm not the youngest to fly, though. I believe Rusty Schweigert was a...
I'm sure you're going to enjoy your journey to the moon from an astronaut point of view as well as a geologist point of view. Talking with Jack Schmidt, the lunar module pilot of Apollo 17. And from Houston, Texas, and the Manned Spacecraft Center, this is Jim Parisi. Jack Schmidt, give us a geologist's overall view of the landing site you're heading for with Apollo 17.
The Taurus Littrow landing area is on the edge of the Serenitatis Basin, which is in the northeast portion of the moon, and clearly visible to anybody who looks at a full moon on a clear night. Its dominant topographic features are composed of some high mountain massifs, we call the North and South Massifs, and some hills that are rounded, high hills, but nevertheless rounded and different, that are called the Sculptured Hills. These surround a narrow, relatively narrow valley in which we'll be landing, in which there are some very flat plains. Now, on these plains and locally around on the hills are some dark mantling materials, or that is, dark materials that appear to cover much of the countryside. These mantling materials appear to have their origins in volcanic processes. So the overall view that we get is that we're dealing with mountains that represent portions of the old lunar crust that have been broken and uplifted by some process we don't fully understand, and that crust is presumably very old, and we have good evidence now to think it's very old, and these will be some of the oldest portions of that crust we'd have a chance to see in the Apollo program. And covering that, then, is what appears to be a much younger deposit, possibly as young as a billion years, of dark volcanic materials. Those are the two main objectives for our sampling program.
So in essence, you'll be getting a look at extremes in the time scale, as it were.
They're extremes in the time scale, and also it gives us, they're unique in that they are going to enable us to test a model of the evolution of the moon that has gradually developed over the last few years of exploration. I think it's a model that more and more people are starting to come to think is the correct model, and the reflection of that evolution is what is the internal structure of the moon. And by looking at these materials, we are going to be able to sample portions of that internal part and structure of the moon, and therefore hopefully verify some of the inferences that we've made based on previous sampling.
By the way, for those of our listeners who may not be absolutely sure, is massif in essence a synonym for mountain?
A group of mountains, really, a coalesced group of mountains. We're using the same sense that it would be used in France and in the Swiss Alps.
You mentioned sculptured hills. Do we know what sculptured them?
No, we don't. Sculptured in this case just means they look as if they've been sculptured. It does not necessarily imply that some process has carved out the hills. We don't know that. It's just an appearance of sculpturing. They're really knobby, would be a better term, but that's the term that has been applied to them, and we try to keep consistent terminology.
Now, of course, one of the things that would prove to be very exciting is if you could find some evidence of water, and in fact you're going to look for evidence of water, aren't you?
That's one of the capabilities of two of the experiments that we have, one which is in orbit in the command and service module around the moon, and one of which we have on the surface, using radio waves as a tool for finding differences in conductivity. And water has such an increase in conductivity over rocks that it's the kind of thing that's easy to find, relatively easy to find. However, that doesn't mean that we really seriously expect to see it. It's just that there are certain possibilities that it could be there, and if it is there, we'll have tools to detect it. But more important, probably, is that we can detect other kinds of differences in electrical conductivity, which will give us changes in rocks in general and give us structure to considerable depth within the crust of the moon.
Well, your geology training and background will be most invaluable on this little visit that you're about to make.
I hope so.
Geologist Dr. Jack Schmidt, the lunar module pilot for Apollo 17. From Houston, Texas, and the Manned Spacecraft Center, for the Voice of America, this is Jim Parisi. Jack, the acronym ALSEP means Apollo Lunar Scientific Experiment Package, and you're taking one to the surface of the moon. Tell us what new experiments are contained in this one that is different from the previous Apollo missions.
The experiments package that we have on Apollo 17 is almost completely new. There is only one experiment that has been flown previously, and that's the experiment that measures the flow or flux of heat from the deep interior of the moon, the heat flow experiment. We are flying that, and it's essentially the same experiment that's been flown on several other missions. The new ones, the new experiments, probably the most important and potentially the most exciting one to science in general is the lunar surface gravimeter. Now, this is a very, very sensitive gravity meter that can measure changes over long periods of time, such as the tides, the lunar tides, the change in elevation that the moon goes through as it is affected by the Earth, and that's very, very slight. It is so sensitive, though. The main purpose of it being there, though, is to detect long-period oscillations of the moon, which would occur if gravity waves passed through this portion of space. Now, gravity waves is something that the principal investigator whose experiment this is has been very interested in for a long period of time and has recently felt that he has detected waves that represent pulsations in a gravity field. And these may be coming from the center of the galaxy. Now, this is pure speculation at this time, but the surface gravimeter is designed primarily to help the astronomers really study and understand gravity. And of course, the implications of understanding gravity are potential implications are comparable to those that if we could have sat and said, maybe we'll understand radioactivity some many decades ago, then you can see now what the implications of understanding that were. Most of them good, not all of them good, but nevertheless, understanding means that we will be able to use these kind of waves, if you will, for other purposes, hopefully. There's a lunar ejecta and meteoroid experiment, which is going to be look at the small particles that are impacting the moon and also being moved about on the moon. There is a lunar surface mass spectrometer that will be measuring in a very detailed way the volatile or the gaseous components that may be drifting around on the moon that we know, in fact, are in the soils and almost certainly are moving, a sort of lunar atmosphere, but very, very thin atmosphere. There's a three new experiments that are related to our use of the rover, or the lunar roving vehicle. One of those is a revised and much augmented lunar surface active seismic experiment. We will be deploying a geophone array, that is an array of sensors, and an array of fairly large explosive packages that after we leave, some 90 hours after we leave, these will be activated by command from the Earth and exploded, and they, again, using seismic energy, will explore, if you will, the internal structure of the floor of the valley that we have landed in. There's the Traverse gravimeter, which is, again, is similar in concept to the gravity meter that I mentioned before, except it's less sensitive, and it's designed primarily to look at the variations in the gravity field of the moon, which again relate to differences in density of materials within the moon itself, and therefore we get more information on the crustal structure. And finally, the surface electrical properties experiment, which I alluded to earlier, is basically a radio wave experiment that has a transmitter that sends radio waves through the materials of the valley. And these are picked up and recorded by a receiver that's mounted on the rover, and the correlation of that recorded data with the position of the rover at any given time will give information, again, on the internal structure of the valley floor and potentially on the presence or absence of water.
And these are not just a one-shot thing. All of these experiments are going to be useful to us for some time in the future, aren't they?
Yes, the package is designed to last at least 3 years, and most of the ALSEP, or the surface packages we have left, have lasted beyond their design lifetime.
Well, a year's worth of information for the same number of days that you will have spent on the surface of the moon is well worth the trip, I would think.
I think so. The combination of that plus the additional observations we can make and samples we can gather while we're there makes it almost an unbeatable effort in terms of man's exploration of the universe.
Jack Schmidt, lunar module pilot for Apollo 17, talking with him here in November, just a few weeks before Apollo 17 gets on its way. Talking with him here at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas. I'm Jim Parisi for the Voice of America. Jack, tell us a little about the second EVA, extravehicular activity, that you'll be taking on the surface of the moon.
The second traverse, or EVA, is really designed to study our prime geologic objective, and that is to sample, observe, and photograph the materials and features associated with the South Massif. This massif is 2,200 meters high, almost certainly represents a considerable section of the lunar crust that is accessible to us for sampling. This sampling site is unique over other sites, such as those on Apollo 15, where we were also trying to do the same thing, in that there appears to have been a major avalanche or landslide in fairly recent time off the side of that massif that is accessible to us. And this avalanche will, if our interpretation is correct of what we see on the photographs, this avalanche will enable us to sample most of that 2,200 meters of stratigraphic section, as the geologists put it. That is, whatever layers are just sequence of materials may be represented in that massif front. We will have several stations on that EVA, our traverse, that will try to systematically sample not only the base of the massif, but moving outward radially along this slide and picking up the materials that may have come from even higher up than we can reach at the base. In addition to this, we will continue the study we started on the first EVA of the dark covering materials and continue to gather more information on those materials, which cover most of the valley floor.
A description of the second EVA, the second lunar traverse, by Jack Schmidt, the lunar module pilot for Apollo 17. From Houston, Texas, and the Manned Spacecraft Center, this is Jim Parisi. Jack Schmidt, what's going to be happening in the third EVA on the surface of the moon?
The third traverse, or EVA, is primarily a comparative study in that we are visiting other examples of massif materials, such as we saw in the first EVA in the South Massif, and other areas covered by the dark mantling deposits, such have been worked on the first and second EVAs. The one major unique contribution of the third EVA is a study of the sculptured hills, which are the very knobby mountainous terrain to the northeast of our landing site. We will have one station in this area. We have no good interpretation for these materials yet, no good model, and it's mainly one of let's go find out what they are. The photographs don't give us any good clue. So that's the something we don't know what to anticipate when we see there, so it makes it exciting from that point of view. One thing that I have not mentioned that we will be doing on all three EVAs at one station each is looking at the materials that form the, or let's put it this way, that underlie the dark covering materials on the valley floor. We call these the subfloor materials for obvious reasons, and they seem to be distinctly different in their photographic characteristics than anything else that we have in the area. And in three different craters, we will try to examine and sample these materials. Again, we don't have any good, clear understanding from the photography what these materials are. Those and probably the sculptured hills also seem to relate in their origin to the formation of the Serenitatis Basin, that they're formed as a result of processes associated with a major impact on the moon. Beyond that, we're pretty much at a loss until we see the samples and see what they look like actually when we get there.
What's the speculation as to what the dark mantle is?
We're all a little nervous about that because everything we see points directly to a volcanic origin, a cinder field, if you will, such as we find in parts all over the world. In many parts of the world, we find volcanic cinders.
Why should that make you nervous?
Well, it makes you nervous because you would like to have other possibilities that you can test. You almost have too much information, and our history, experience in the lunar business, has been that once you think you know the answer, you generally find out that you didn't really know it. So it's sort of an intuitive nervousness, if you will. But we do think that the evidence right now, everything we have points directly to a volcanic origin, a fairly explosive volcanic origin that from many, many different vents in the area that have, and the materials coming out have covered large areas. And so I feel pretty confident that's what it will be, but we always try to keep an element of doubt in our thinking so that we won't miss something that we should have seen.
And as you have said on a couple of occasions, the unexpected is the thing to look for.
That's right.
Yeah. Jack Schmidt, lunar module pilot of Apollo 17, and talking with him here in Houston, Texas, just before the flight of Apollo 17, I'm Jim Parisi for the Voice of America. Jack, give us your own scientific point of view of Apollo 17 and, for that matter, of all the Apollo missions.
Well, I feel that the scientific news of Apollo is that man, in general, has now the capability to understand the evolution of another planet other than his own. I think if you had asked me, even as brief a time ago as a year or two, whether or not we were going to have a first-order understanding of the evolution of the planet Moon, I would have been very hesitant to say so. But in the last few months, I think as the information from the samples and our understanding of what the other crews have seen and observed and photographed increases, I think that, I feel at any rate, that within the next few years, that first-order understanding of how the Moon evolved in time as a planet will exist. And that's what Apollo has given us. And that's a unique thing scientifically. It has to be unique because it's the first planet man has tried to understand other than his own. And it's important also in that it increases our understanding of our own planet, because the evolution of the Moon took place during a period of time that has been previously almost entirely hidden from us on Earth. The Earth is a very dynamic planet now. It's still relatively young in terms of its evolution. Certainly with respect to the Moon, it's young. And the crust of the Earth is changing continually over geologic time at any rate, and even over present time. You can see it change. The rivers change it. The oceans change it. And new volcanoes change it. This is all happening now. In addition, it's been happening to such an extent over the last 3 billion years on Earth that anything earlier than 3 billion years ago is very, very much obscure. Where on the Moon, it's the thing we're looking at. It's the first rocks brought back from the Moon were older than 3 billion years, and that has immediately made the Moon a much more exciting place for understanding the Earth than we had expected it to be.
That's, by the way, 3,000 million. Billion means different things in different places.
That's
in the
right.
World, so we pin it down there. Well, where is the place in your mind of Apollo 17 in connection with the future scientific exploration of, for that matter, the universe?
I think now that we are pausing in the exploration of the far frontier of space, which now is at the Moon, it's suddenly, as soon as we pause, that frontier can move anywhere. And I think it's going to take a continually look and synthesis of the lunar data that we now have in order to make a clear decision on where we ought to go next. I think it's very clear in my mind that the main potential the Moon offers now to us is to establish the capability to move great distances and to stay great lengths of time on the Moon in order to study these processes that are associated with the formation of large basins, because they have influenced the whole planet, the Moon. And such similar processes almost certainly influence the Earth. The large impacts on the Earth almost certainly influence the distribution of materials on this planet that we have to live on. That is the main contribution I feel the Moon can give us now. But that's not to say it is what we ought to concentrate on with limited resources. It may be we decide after the Viking program lands on, puts a landing vehicle on Mars, and continued analysis of the data from the Mariner spacecraft, which has been coming in, it may turn out that we should concentrate our attention on Mars and try to understand its evolution again so we can relate it back to ourselves. That may be the final decision. I think it will go either way, a major lunar program based on lunar base or a major Martian program.
Well, we wish you the very best on the flight of Apollo 17.
Thank you.
Jack Schmidt, Lunar Module Pilot for Apollo 17. From the Houston Manned Spacecraft Center, this is Jim Parisi for the Voice of America.
I am Jack Schmidt, Lunar Module Pilot on Apollo 17. Let me just say to keep on listening. After the news, live coverage of our extravehicular activities on the surface of the moon. So please stay tuned. I'm Jack Schmidt, Lunar Module Pilot on Apollo 17. Don't fall asleep. We can't. There's more news coming up on our moon mission.